side, got a man open in the end zone. Stills grabs a touchdown. Kenny Stills, what a pair of hands.
Lehman showing blitz. There's a blitz.
Super job, you're a champion.
All right, guys, welcome to the Bud Berry Bobby and Beer Podcast. I'm your host, Kami. I'm your hobby, and joined by my co-hosts, Steven Brown and Trevor Rogers. Y'all, how are we doing tonight? How are our lives going?
It's going. It feels like it's been like the slowest week of all time. I feel like this week has been like 3 weeks long.
Why?
I don't know why.
It's like, in general, great Groundhog Day, like Groundhog Day situation.
Maybe that's it. But I just feel like this week has just lingered.
Yeah,
I hate lingering.
I feel that. did you guys know that a humidifier can set off a smoke alarm?
What? I mean, I guess
it makes sense. But I woke up at 4 a.m. With the smoke alarm going off in my daughter's room. And, of course, like that freaks you out.
That's alarming. Yeah. It's alarming.
Yeah. Ran in, got her out of the crib. She was freaked out. And I went, handed her to my wife and like kind of ran back into that room. And I was like, I don't smell smoke. What is this? But like something felt off, and I mean I was still kind of like waking up, like parental instincts just kicked in and you kind of go. Sure. It was her room was humid as shit because we run a humidifier because she's been kind of like sick the last few weeks because
okay. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And yeah, she I guess that's what tripped it. But I mean, I was like, it was like 4:30 in the morning and I was crawling up in the attic, making sure that there wasn't an electrical fire.
Jeez.
So I echo Steve-O's sentiment that it has felt like the longest week ever.
Yeah, it seems like a lot longer in my week. I just thought today was Friday, but those weeks sound much longer than mine. I just have tomorrow and then I have the weekend off. So I am thankful for that, but let's get to some Sooners talk. We have some stuff for you guys, some Super Bowl kind of bet stuff, some shooty hoops, a little bit of recruiting. We got some softball started today, so I got some notes on that, and then we'll take a kind of trip down memory lane, do a little bit of thought of experiment, see how that goes. But we kind of mentioned this last week, Fox College Football mentioned this stat and actually brought up the teams. That, of course, the Sooners have the most players represented in the Super Bowl for the second year in a row. And they mentioned that Georgia has 5 players, and then Florida and Michigan both have 4 players, and then the list goes on. Nobody on this list that represents more than 1 player is Texas. So, I mean, that's got to feel good, right? So the Chiefs and the Niners, the line is that it's Niners by 1.5, and the over-under is 47.5. Well, how do we feel about those lines? And just the general, thought that OU for the second year in a row has included several guys that make it to the Super Bowl.
I mean,
I still think the Chiefs win.
It feels right. Yeah, I'm kind of right there too.
Like, I know it. They have a really good defense. You know, they have Christian McCaffrey, Brock Purdy somehow playing okay, despite, you know, almost getting killed in Norman. But I don't know, the Chiefs just feel unstoppable. Like, every time there's just a clutch situation, they just come away with it. And I just don't know if you put Brock Purdy in that situation where he has to go down the field, you know, 2 minutes or whatever's left on the clock to get some points. I don't know if they're going to do that.
That's where I'm at is how, like, and it's, I don't want to like necessarily just like be a Brock Purdy hater, but I just have like Brock Purdy getting smoked on the 45-yard line.
Is that a prop bet? A
couple years ago in Norman. Yeah. Steven, did we go to that game together? We were at that game together.
I think we were, yeah. That was the loudest hit I've ever heard from that far away.
Yeah, like up there in like the middle level on the east side and just heard Brock Purdy get smoked. And that's just still kind of the guy that stands out to me. I totally he has earned his spot as an NFL quarterback. Like I have no beef. But I think you're spot on in the sense of, I don't know if this guy is the guy that is ready for the moment against a really good Kansas City defense, very experienced Super Bowl team. But the flip side of that is Kyle Shanahan's got to get over the hump at some point, right? I mean, San Francisco is the more talented team. Kansas City just has the better quarterback. So I don't know.
And tight end.
Yep. I agree with that.
Marginal.
No disrespect to Kittle, but.
Yeah, got to give respect for the Norman boy.
So, yeah, I'm curious about it too. I mean, Chiefs defense is tough. And like you guys said, like you said, Steven, I count on that amount of, I guess, experience, especially in the situations in Brock Purdy, I think. And I think the over-under, I think it actually maybe stays under. I don't know. We'll see.
What was the over-under again?
At 47.5. And I think I just don't know if there's going to be a lot of points scored, but I say that and it's going to be like 35-38. So who knows? But have you guys
I'm taking Kansas City.
What are some of your, have you guys ever done any Super Bowl bets, and what have they been and won?
I have not been on the Super Bowl ever, but a lot of my friends have money on the Chiefs. So we'll see if that goes anywhere.
I mean, it's good I've money done right now.
Prop bets are fun. Like, how long is the national
anthem? The anthem.
Yeah, that's a good one. The coin toss.
First halftime song. It's always a good one.
First rushing touchdown, just like random stuff. Oh, gosh.
How excited are people for Usher, by the way?
Probably not that excited, to be honest.
Was it you guys that were saying that were telling me like these artists like pay
to be? Yeah, they pay for pretty much the entire show.
That's amazing.
I mean, you know,
they pay for the stage, they pay for the the crew and everything.
Yeah. I mean, if this was like 20 years ago, I'd be vibing with it. But anyways. I've won some Super Bowl bets. They were like prop bets, like who gets first touchdown, who catches it. So that was just like one lucky year. And then I found that gambling can be addicting. But we can move on to, speaking of gambling, especially with money, let's go to recruiting. Steven, I know that Junior Day has been very, very successful. And then I'm sure it's going to bleed, obviously, into this next calendar year. They've hosted a lot of guys. Thoughts?
This class, despite the numbers crunch, I think a lot of people think they have, I think they'll end up with 22, 23, has a lot of potential to be pretty good and maybe in some ways better than the 2024 class. You already have 10 commits. You just got one in Ryan Fodge, the offensive tackle out of Texas, who I think right now is a 3-star. He may move up. He's kind of a project guy, very athletic for his size. I think he's 6'6", 6'7", but kind of in the same mold as like Tyler Guyton, where you see the athleticism, you see like the frame and everything. He's just got to put it together, got to go in the weight room and put it together there. So it's a high upside pick. But what's crazy is a lot of this recruiting info coming out, and a lot of this talk it's all from the Texas side. You don't really hear it too much from the Oklahoma side right now. In particular, like Jonah Williams, you saw the crystal balls for Jonah Williams coming out from guys from Texas A&M. Even with the offensive tackles, like Michael Fasusi, Lamont Rogers, Ty Haywood, Andrew Babaloa, like they're in position to land two of those four right now. And that's really impressive because all those guys right now are in pretty much the five-star conversation. They're ranked within the top 50, top 25 kind of guys. So overall, I think this class, you know, it's going to be judged by the offensive tackles, kind of like how the 2024 class was judged on the defensive line. But there's just talent everywhere. And if they can add someone like, you know, Landon Rink, who is like a Texas legacy, which is that's going to work against him. But so far, he's made a couple trips to Norman. If they can land someone like that and maybe someone else on the defensive line, this could be a really good class.
Do you think this class, I mean, like, of course, it's super early. Things change all the time. It's recruiting. Do you think this next class ends up being still in the top 10, or do you think it drops a little bit out because they're not taking as many bodies as they are this year?
It will be, I think they'll be in the top 10. I think they'll be somewhere between like 5 and 8. Obviously you don't have an elite quarterback that pushes those classes over the edge to get you in those like
what, top, what is like 5-8, you know, like 1 to 5, third or fourth in the SEC?
Probably. Yeah. Third or fourth, something like that. So you'll take that, you know, going into your first year in the SEC for sure. But and you, there's like also wide receiver talent that they could add and somehow, you know, push that class farther into the top five. But we'll just have to wait and see if that happens there.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how it shapes up. And, of course, like I know really positive things came out of Junior Day. And the staff is just like, a lot of people didn't really have too much like thought that Oklahoma's recruiting would be anywhere near the level as it is right now, especially when Lincoln Riley did leave and it's only elevated its own position. And I think that's impressive, especially in wake of like what Lincoln Riley's staff has been able to do. But
yeah, Trevor, I'm coming to you. That stands out.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
One thing that stands out about this class, and, you know, classes before this is these early evaluations of guys that are, you know, unranked or three stars, particularly with like PJ Adebare. You have a couple instances of this class where you might have a guy that's ranked outside, you know, 400 and he looks like a top 100 player on film. So I like the evals that they're doing. The recruiting staff, despite, you know, what some people say, adding all these analysts, I think it's working in their favor. And then we also talk about how, you know, using this NIL crunch, well, a lot of it just goes to high school recruiting, and that's where they're making their mark.
Let's see. Man, it's interesting to see Oklahoma, especially with Brent Venables. Do you think they are digging for kind of like more diamonds in the rough than obviously the previous regime? Because the previous regime seems like they just chased stars a lot and didn't actually chase true fits, even though they did have like really good fits in Dimitri Flowers, who Bob Stoops recruited, by the way, and a lot of other guys. But there were guys of that profile, like Mikey Henderson would have been a great player in Lincoln Riley's system, I believe, and even in really a lot of systems. And so, I mean, are they looking for diamonds in the rough in comparison to guys that are just like they're hunting stars, like kind of like Deion Sanders is doing right now in Prime? Yeah.
I think they fill in the pieces with just good evaluations, but I don't think they're by any means just exclusively hunting for diamonds in the rough. Like they're going after several top 100 guys, and several guys will end up, you know, within the top 200, 250. So this class will be up there in the rankings. And then, you know, if you have a crack, like in the defensive line, you know, maybe you'll get a guy that you really like and just, you know, develop over the next 2 to 3 years.
Would you say your diamonds of the rough are your preferred walk-on plus guys?
Yeah, like, I don't know if you could call Andy Bass a diamond in the rough because he did end up, you know, a 3-4-star ranking.
He had 3-star, yeah.
But
yeah, that's a good point.
You know, like some of those fringy guys at the end of the class, like, hey, you got a big frame. We like your athleticism. We like your speed. We want you to come, you know, develop over the next 3-4 years and see if we can play you. So. Yeah, you know, like the kid out of Bethany a couple recruiting classes ago kind of fits that mold.
That's a good point. And so, Trevor, let me come to you on the opposite side of things. Let's go some shoot hoops. I know Steven you know, especially when the team is not doing well at the moment. I mean, I know he's just not a watcher of the basketball, of Sooners basketball at Lloyd Noble and or away. And, you know, since we last talked, Oklahoma lost to a game I thought they should have won in UCF. They're a better team than UCF is. I was actually really surprised and disappointed. But then they handled top 25 BYU the very next game, and I feel like there's a lot of fan reaction. I mean, Oklahoma is right in the middle of the Big 12. They're 5-5, and they're not like near the bottom, but I mean, the top is 7-3, and the bottom is 2-8. And so there's just a cluster. Like I mentioned when we first talked about hoops, this entire season was that you might have one or two or three separate for themselves from the pack. But then there's just going to be this huge log jam for like them 4-8 or 3-7 or something like that. And that's obviously what's happening right now. I mean, Oklahoma does have tough games down the stretch. I mean, Bedlam, that's obviously the one they should win. But then they go to Baylor. They have Kansas at home. Bedlam, again, they should win. And then they go to Iowa State. Then they host Houston. Then Cincinnati home. Then they go to Texas. So those are it's a tough stretch of games. I mean, but Oklahoma has to show out, and so far now they have what, 17 wins to show for it. Right now they're being projected as a 6 seed. What do you think? What's the reaction to all of this, and what do you think of the fan reaction? I've seen some visceral reactions, but also reactions of like kind of like waiting and seeing.
I think it's just like being, you know, I think it's just like a little too much PTSD for hoops fans that you just kind of wonder, like, when are they really going to turn the corner? Like, when are we going to stop talking about Oklahoma as a fringe tournament team? And it seems like we hear the story every year, like coming out of, you know, the non-con, that like, this is a team that's going to make waves. And I mean, they have a favorable schedule. They crack into the top 10 a couple of times this year and then now completely fall out of the top 25. I get it. You know, I get it for fans. It's hard. It's like, is the program, you know, potentially trending in the right direction this year? Yeah, absolutely. Are they going to make the tournament? Yeah, more than likely. I think that they've still got winnable games on the schedule. But then when you have your head scratcher of, you know, losing, you know, one in the Big 12 to like really make any kind of statement, finish in the top half of the league, you've got to protect home court. And the manner in which they lost to Texas Tech, still very frustrating for fans. Getting your ass kicked by Texas and then going to UCF that is just not good, and just getting your shit kicked in there. So like I kind of understand where fans are coming from, but it's also it's in a vacuum because the Big 12 is just a gauntlet. So like, that's where you have the other half of the fan base. It's like, let's wait a minute and let's just see, you know, let's see how this pans out. And maybe they're still trending in the right direction. It was a bigger rebuild than any of us ever kind of imagined. I know we all lament about like the facilities aren't there, and like Oklahoma's never really been a juggernaut, you know, like Oklahoma's not going to clean up an NIL, you know, on the hoop mm-hmm. side of things. And mm-hmm. so like, you've got all of those factors. And I guess it's a lot of people that are kind of teetering on the edge of where their interests should be. And it just seems like you're at this junction with Porter Moser, who I think is the final year of his contract, right? Like he just signed a 2-year deal.
Yeah.
You're just kind of sitting there thinking, like, is making the tournament, which he has yet to do at Oklahoma, is that good enough to like prove that you're trending in the right direction? Or is Oklahoma mired in mediocrity and do you need to cut your losses and just start over again in a new conference? And I don't know. I don't think anybody knows, because Oklahoma wants to fancy itself that it has a very proud hoops history. I love OU hoops. I've got a ton of fond memories of, you know, those Kelvin teams, and like, again, testament to like Kelvin Sampson. That was, you know, what almost 10 years, a decade of basketball, and OU fans wanted him gone. You know, they couldn't wait to get him out the door.
Too many text messages.
Yeah, like crazy that, you know, like all of that happens, and you start again, you go from a Final Four to an Elite Eight to just kind of trending downward. But regardless, it's just been consistency across the board at Oklahoma. And I think you're just kind of in this really tumultuous place where you don't know how to feel. You don't know what the future holds for OU hoops. And so every win and loss, you take it way harder or celebrate it way more than you probably should, which is the nature of the conference, the nature of the sport, and the nature of the program. OU hoops has an identity crisis. And so I get why fans are frustrated. I get why fans have fear. I could not at this point though, like, do I care if Porter Moser gets an extension? I don't know. I'm not going to be that upset. Like, you know, if you start over again, like, you're potentially looking at another 2-3 years of the same, probably. I don't think anybody comes in, just fixes the program overnight. So what's wrong with signing Porter Moser to another 3-year contract? It's not going to bury OU basketball.
Steven, let's you're the voice of reason on this podcast. Has Porter Moser done enough, or is the jury still out for you? Because I mean, again, you are the pulse and the heartbeat of Oklahoma, average Oklahoma hoops watchers, Sooners basketball. And for you, has he hit the mark, or is he on the hot seat, or what are your thoughts?
Or do you care? Like,
I care a little bit, like not a lot. I'm gonna be honest with you, I don't care that much, but I'm intrigued, like what the future could look like. Do I think he's gonna go out and win, you know, the tournament for Oklahoma and bring, you know, national championship to Oklahoma? I don't think so. And I don't think even if you fire Porter Moser and bring someone else in, I don't think they're gonna do it either, because basketball, you know, we talk about all this NIL with football, basketball, yeah. You just can't compete with the best. And that's because they have a really good football team. And that's where a lot of the money goes. That's where a lot of the resources go. That's why they don't have a new arena. That's why they're behind an NIL. It's not supported like a top 25 program is. So I don't know if like Porter Moser, he could be the best coach in the world. I don't know. I just don't think it's going to happen at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, like, and honestly,
I think Porter Moser is going to thrive in the SEC. For what it's worth, like his style of play and how mundane the league is compared to the Big 12, I think Porter Moser is going to thrive. And maybe like that's all you need is like just consistency. Even if you're like, you know, if you get to a Sweet 16 every 4 years at OU,
that's like the goal.
That should be the goal. A Final Four every 8 years or 10 years, like that's unreal.
Yeah.
Like that would.
I don't think. Yeah, I don't think any fan. I don't think any AD at Oklahoma is ever gonna think Oklahoma basketball should. I mean, like reaching a Final Four is like special, like really special. Let alone an Elite Eight. I think like,
well, half of it's luck.
I think just like make the tournament regularly or somewhat regularly, you know, you might miss a year here or there, right? Because you're not a basketball state. You never were a basketball state. I mean, sure, like Blake Griffin, Trey Young's come out of Oklahoma, sure, and others, but they're not a basketball state. They're a football state, and so Oklahoma doesn't invest in basketball programs. Of course, you know, the Thunder are here, but that's a different story of, you know, investing into a program.
They
and
just got a $900 million arena.
Yeah,
no, courtesy of the people of OKC.
And yeah, 70-30. So that's a great scoreboard number, but it's interesting because
remember,
yeah. Gosh. It's just so interesting about Porter Moser because, again, like you just said, Steven, nobody will expect Oklahoma to win a national championship on basketball ever. And I think the expectations are just somewhat make the tournament, but more often than not, and make a Sweet 16 here or there. And if it gets any more than that, then that's a pretty good season.
I think you just need to always be making the tournament, win your games at home. And here's the thing, like Oklahoma back, like fan base, like I'm sorry, we're not a fan base that's like Iowa State, excuse me, or hell, even Iowa, but like Iowa State that like packs it in to Hilton, you know, even in some of those years where they, you know, they haven't been as good, you know, when Hoiberg left, like when they had Prohm.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but they were still packing it. That's a very passionate fan base. They just that's just what they do. And I get that. And that's fine. Oklahoma, but
their football team suck though.
But they still pack it in. And that's what's kind of amazing. It's like that's just the culture. And I'm not saying OU's a bad fan base. I'm just saying it's different. But on the positive, guys, do you think anybody would really give a shit about OU softball if they weren't as dominant as they are? OU backs winners.
I definitely would.
And now it's ingrained. You back winners at Oklahoma. You win, we'll go support. And so I really do think consistency, be in the SEC, finish in the top 3-4 of the conference every year. You may not make a deep run in the tournament, but so long as you're winning your games in the conference, I think that will fix a lot of the perception for OU fans. And I'm wrong on that. OU just wants to see winners. And Oklahoma hoops in the last 6 years, you just don't know on any given night if they're going to win a game.
I mean, Oklahoma since Kelvin Sampson has not been a consistent winner, for being quite honest. But hey, dude, no shit. Who is a consistent winner? I mean, is who Steven just talked about, who he said he'd watch no matter what. Oklahoma softball, they start today at a place called Puerto Vallarta in Mexico. I was actually, funny story, I was actually supposed to go to, after a wedding, go elope and stuff like that. But then COVID happened. So then we had the different plans. But so it's like a beach in Mexico. It's really cool. There are a lot of teams there in Nebraska. They play two games today, Utah Valley and a team they just whipped 13-0 just to kind of in a warm up, and then actually play a top 10 team. It's just like 9, 11, you know, somewhere around there, depending on whatever ranking system you used. And then one's at 10 on the actual television. And they go 3-0 in Puerto Vallarta. Kelly Maxwell, who stays pissing OSU off just by simply playing for OU, only had one hit in 5 innings pitched. And
11 straight batters.
Yeah, and she seems like the real deal for Oklahoma. And so, I mean, first of all, what JT Gasso gets a promotion to like associate head coach, right? Steven, I'm coming to you first on this one, because I mean, I know we all watch the softball team. I mean, do you read anything into that?
A little bit, yeah, just based on what you guys keep telling me. It seems very convenient for going into this season.
Yeah, and like, I mean, Trevor, what are your thoughts on it as well? I mean, no, Patty, I suppose Patty knowing that there's already a statue of her available.
I mean, it the right on the wall with this senior class. Making the transition to the SEC, you've done literally pretty much everything that you could ever want to accomplish. I don't know. JT Gasso is your guy moving forward. I don't think it's any secret. I mean, are you just saying like? Sorry, I like tuned out. I just read on Twitter real quick that Jordy Ball got hurt, and so I was a little distracted.
Oh. Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, that's not convenient for the tournament. Okay.
Yeah,
that's a sorry. Her too.
Yeah.
No, you don't think Patty would do at least one season, though, in the SEC?
I don't think she's going to. Like, why? You know, Patty's got grandkids at this point that she wants to, like, that. Having known the Gasso family for a really long time, like, that's who Patty, like, really wants to be at this point. She's talked about, you know, I know, like, some people kind of, like, gave Jordy shit for, like, heading back to Nebraska and kind of, like, what was the reason behind that, you know, being homesick, so, you know, so on and so forth. Patty herself has talked about how last year was the hardest thing she's ever done. And I just don't see how you top that. And so, like, I think it took its toll. She's a family person across the board. You look at when Oklahoma, like, I look back at, like, you know, like, Melissa, you know, like, look at their assistants on their staff. Like, Melissa Lombardi is now the head coach at Oregon. Yeah. Like, they started to build something really, really special, you know, over a decade ago with, you know, with Kalani Rick losing that national championship game to Alabama before coming back and being, you know, at the time, one of the most dominant teams. You know, people were talking about one of the most dominant softball teams ever, and they still had, like, what, 11 losses, 10 losses on the year, mm-hmm. like that?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go all the way to losing twice. Or what? Once. They lost one game last year.
Yeah.
To Baylor. They lost one game. And then you win the national championship. And what's left after that? Honoring kind of like sticking through like the senior group that you helped build. So like I look at like when they started to build that with Melissa and then, you know, they bring in JT to coach. That's when Oklahoma really started truly evolved into like, they had a dynasty going like the, you know, big play Shea, like the Shea Knighton teams, like those are good softball teams, but the machine that they became, I don't think it's a coincidence that that happened when they brought in DJ Gasso or excuse me, that's her other son, JT Gasso. And
lots of letters out there.
Yeah, right. And you see this evolution of how she built her lineup. That is a Major League Baseball clubhouse with an actual like starting rotation. Yeah. That doesn't happen in college softball. How many years was it you have Kat Osterman? And that's all you need. You need one good pitcher.
Sure.
And you have a bunch of like slap bunners and you're gonna go compete for national championships. JT Gasso comes in and Patty had already started to do this and said, I'm going to outslug you to death. I'm going to get the most physically imposing athletes in this sport and they're going to be able to hit everything. And oh yeah, by the way, I'm not going to have one ace. I'm going to have four of them. So like I said, that didn't happen overnight, but it did kind of happen. I saw like the iteration of the like machine that we see Oklahoma at today, the level that we see them at today. It's not a coincidence that it was when they brought in JT Gasso. And so having gone through this juggernaut of, again, one loss, you've achieved it. You are the greatest softball team of all time. You've done that.
Again.
Go be grandma, Patty. Like, I get it. Like, the SEC is going to be tough. It's going to be a gauntlet. JT is going to be fine. Like, he's a damn good softball coach. If that really is the mission, if that really is like the writing on the wall there, I see at this point, this is the perfect juncture for Patty to hang it up. Finish out your senior class. You don't need to steward the transition. Let the next guy do it. I'm sorry if I was all over the place. Like I said, I was reading about Jordy Paul when you asked the question. That was my bad.
No, but I think it's interesting to think about like her just like stopping, especially in the Big 12. I mean, Steven, do you regularly watch the softball team other than like the women's college world, college World Series? Excuse me.
I will watch if it's like a ranked game,
and it's like on ESPN weekends. Or something.
But like, yeah. But if it's like I'm not trying to like seek it out unless it's all over Twitter. It's like, hey, OU's sure. hosting, you know, number sure. five Texas or whatever. I'll go watch that.
Yeah, and I knew they were playing today, and I thought it was interesting. So, I mean, they start the season off well. I mean, they take down a top 10 opponent already, and Kelly Maxwell, again, looks really great. Oklahoma, they have a good showing against kind of a warm-up team. Again, they're the favorites in the Big 12, so we'll see if they have enough to make it to another. The expectation, of course, among all of us, I'm sure, is for them to make the Women's College World Series, but we'll see. You know, a little bit later on into the spring, as far as how that actually is going. So how this
if they stay healthy, this team, there's not it's Oklahoma and everyone else.
I just see like a major lack of leadership that they lost. I mean, like Grace Lyons. I mean, you got Kenzie Hansen, and like I get Jada Coleman's being leader, but I mean, I think losing Grace Lyons is I think a pretty significant loss to their clubhouse.
I mean, sure, but it's just you got back 90% of that lineup. You get back, sure. you know, you get back Nicole, like it, and then also like you have to look at like the landscape of softball. Like Kennedy, like everybody's talking about, like Stanford is probably the heir apparent right now. Like they're everybody's hot pick. They're my pick. Like if you're gonna look at like if I were to call my shot right now and say who's gonna be in the national championship game at the end of the year. It's going to be Oklahoma and Stanford. And even like, I'm just like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it's okay. I think you're right. Yeah. Losing Grace Lyons. Sure. Oklahoma's of course going to take a step back. Like last year, that was the greatest softball team ever. Like that doesn't just happen again, but I still think like the bar or like the level that they are at across the board, their entire roster is so much more talented than the rest of softball. Stanford's really, really good, but they don't have the sticks. They have one pitcher that they can kind of rely on. And that sure. is the clear cut. Everybody that's in the know that covers, you know, college softball is basically saying, yeah, I think it's going to be Oklahoma and Stanford. And even then there's kind of a further gap beyond that. So I think OU's set. I think if they don't make the national, honestly though, if they don't win the national championship, it's a disappointment. That's insane. Jeez. If they don't win, that's a failure. Wow. Like that is the expectation for this team, and that's not going to be the case next year because you, like I said, you lose this senior class. But that's insane. That is the standard. If they don't win the national championship this year, which they are. The runaway favorites again, that is a really, really big disappointment. And that's why, again, like if Patty hangs it up this year, that's it. Real quick, side note, because I know we got other things to talk about. Cassidy Pickering. And again, you want to talk about like players that are going to take Oklahoma into like the SEC. Hits a grand slam on her first at bat. One, freshmen don't make it into Patty Gasso's starting lineups very often. And she's already like racking up RBIs. She's already like, she already hits a grand slam. Not a single, like you listen to like the Seven Innings podcast people, all the people like giving their predictions on who like player of the year is going to be, who like the freshman impact. Cassidy Pickering is going to be that special person. You think like, oh, did OU, like does OU have another Jocelyn Allo, Lauren Chamberlain type? That's the name that I give you to follow. That's who OU fans should be looking forward to.
We'll see. I mean, I don't know. I feel like they're going to lose more games this year, which is fine. Of course, it's a long season. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. But so let's go to a thought experiment. And Steve, I'm going to come to you for this first, though. Just some precursor to it. What do you believe to be the current perception of Oklahoma football from like Oklahoma insider perspective, but more so from a national perspective?
I think they're a good, not great team from a national perspective. I think maybe the brand has fallen a little bit back than it was in like the mid 2000s, because you don't have those just defensive all-stars that you had, you know, Tommy Harris. And I think like a lot of the national media, when you talk about college football, like quarterbacks are good, but like quarterbacks don't always push you over the edge. And especially if you look at Oklahoma, they had two of the best to ever do it. And they couldn't even win a playoff game. They were just nowhere close except for, you know, the Georgia game, I guess. So you're looking at like defensive stars, especially in the defensive trenches. And those are the teams that always get that national respect, the national hype, guys that can just push you around and kind of just, you know, set the tone for the game. And Oklahoma hasn't really produced one of those. They've come close. Like they've had some good pieces on the defensive line in the last 10 years, but they haven't had a group. They haven't had a guy that's just a national name. So I think when it comes to the national media perspective, I think they're a team that, like a lot of people think they'll just be top 15 team for, you know, however long college football goes on. But right now, I don't think anyone thinks they're like a top five squad moving forward.
And so just to follow that up, then what from the SEC fan base, because Oklahoma and Texas are the incomers to the conference, from an SEC fan base perspective, I mean, let's say you're Florida. Let's say you're a Florida fan or an LSU fan. Oklahoma's coming to the conference. So is Texas. But let's Oklahoma, if you're here, obviously. What is your perspective on the fan base? Or what is your, not fan base, but what is your perspective on the Oklahoma Sooners coming into 2024?
You know, I mean, Oklahoma's done well against the SEC, especially, I mean, Florida. You look at that game, the bowl game. So I think there is some respect in the SEC coming in. But I also think a lot of the SEC fan base is just so caught up in like, hey, we've SEC. We've had this patch on our jersey for, you know, however many years we've been in the conference. Like, you're still an outsider. You're not going to be like this team that comes and just dominates. I don't think that's reasonable. I think Oklahoma's going to join the SEC and they'll do well. But like Florida, I think they're still caught up. You know, they're probably in their Tebow years. Missouri, they're just high off their NIL and their recruiting class. And Ole Miss, you know, they think they're just the next Alabama. So, I mean, I think there's some respect, but all these programs outside of maybe Vanderbilt probably don't feel threatened by Oklahoma.
Sure.
Especially LSU, so, who just puts everybody in the league. But
yeah, no shit, right? Like, there are so many guys in leagues, especially.
Looks like they put 37 guys in the league in the last 5 years.
It's nuts. So, it's nuts. And, like, especially good. Like just then, that's just from LSU, and like there's so many other guys from Alabama that, you know, even short term guys, sure, but even long term guys, yes. Georgia's putting guys in the league now. Roquan Smith, who just exited the playoffs a couple weeks ago or whatever, but guys are still playing some high level football. But Trevor, kind of same question, but more sticking to the SEC fan base perspective. But again, like, yeah, let's say you're like LSU, Arkansas, whoever, not Vanderbilt, basically, not even Kentucky at all. What is your perception of Oklahoma coming into the league?
If I'm a fan of one of those teams, it's, I mean, it just, I feel like nobody lives in reality. Like no SEC fan lives in any kind of like, rational parameter.
Like, as it should be.
Like, no, it is. It's, you are either, we are, I, every fan base is, we are the next Alabama and you're dog shit. Doesn't matter that we've been dog shit for the last 20 years. We're the next, not you. And Oklahoma, you know, you guys can't win the Big 12 the last couple of years in your shitty conference. You're on the way out. You're the next Nebraska. It's delusional, I think, on both sides. I think OU fans, I'd say for the most part, a lot of them have the right expectation that it's going to be an up and down. It's in the SEC. But I would say, like, from the other end, there's very little respect for Oklahoma. I mean, listen to how Arkansas fans talk about Oklahoma. Arkansas hasn't done shit in 25 years.
Arkansas people are from Arkansas are stupid.
That's it.
I mean, like, true. unless you listen to this podcast, then you're really smart.
Except for the Chapmans, if they listen, because you're smart. Both doctors.
But even they went to OU.
Sure. From Arkansas. Love you.
That's true. Love you, Chapman family. But they're, yeah. Anyways, yeah, it's just.
Everybody else, dumb as a rock.
It's dumb as a rock. It's a bunch of fan bases that, and the SEC kind of just like breeds that. And it's like even like smart, intelligent people, like smart, intelligent analysts that, you know, get paid a lot of money to cover this sport and cover that conference. That you just get into this hype that it's just like Oklahoma has been playing, you know, junior league ball compared to what the, like they're jumping from junior league to the NFL. And it's just, yes, I think the SEC is obviously a way more talented league. There's a lot more, you know, consistent, you know, talent and obviously just brand awareness, brand legitimacy in the SEC. But it's not a huge leap. It's not like a massive, this unattainable leap that Oklahoma can't make.
Yeah. And I kind of view it as like what the, I mean, it's a little bit different being in blue blood for Oklahoma, obviously, but I look at it as the Big 12 basketball schedule where there's a few more superpowers at the top there. I mean, of course, Alabama, well, looks like they're on their way down, but Georgia's rising, Texas is rising, Oklahoma's recruiting class seems on the uptick, but so hopefully the program looks like it's heading in the right direction defensively and hopefully offensively under Luttrell, and of course, other teams in the conference that are getting new head coaches as well. And so, I mean, like Oklahoma, yeah. Are you another team right now? Sure. Like, are you one of the superpowers like Georgia right now? No, they're not. And everybody knows it. And so I think they're just like one of the really good teams, but maybe not one of the best teams. And I think that's how they're viewed. So, I mean, I think they'll be viewed as a very competitive team week in and week out. I think that's more than fair than anything else really. But I do want to take you guys down this thought experiment because it's interesting to kind of reflect and like confront history, I suppose, and just kind of like really like reflect on like what we were thinking and kind of confront those things about like what could have been as far as Bob Stoops and his teams. This is like not about Bob Stoops anyways. It's just like Oklahoma football, right? So Stoops and his staff, they arrive in 99. They take a team in obscurity, 2-7-5, and they go to the Liberty Bowl. And they play Ole Miss, don't win, but you know they show a promising season. And then they're just on the fringes of the national polls in the following year, and Bob Stoops wins the national title, 13-2, Florida State. And then every year, they never really seem to make it over the hump. But let's say, in this version of history, Bob Stoops wins a national title in 2003 against LSU, despite losing to Kansas State in the Big 12 title game that people forget to mention. And let's say they actually have, maybe even without DeMarco Murray, maybe also 2008, because I'm not going to count 2004. They got blown out by USC. But they also win 2008, which is also a close game. They probably should have won. How much does that, let's stay here for a second. And Trevor, I'll come to you first, just kind of briefly. How does that change the program of Oklahoma football? Now you have 9 national championships. What is that? How does that change your perception of the fan base and the national perception, I suppose?
I think it, you basically flip-flop Oklahoma and Ohio State. Because think about it. You know, Ohio State's one national championship win outside of the 2002 Jim Tressel. Because think about it. How many times did Jim Tressel, like, how many, he played in, what, three other national championship games and got his shit kicked in?
Yeah.
And then you have the random Cardale Jones, you know, the Urban Meyer Hail Mary.
Yeah, third string quarterback.
Yeah, winning a national championship. And then you look at like the perception is like, okay, like Ohio State is in that pinnacle. They're in the, you know, there's of the three programs that could win a national championship every year. The names that always get thrown out there were Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. And if Oklahoma wins those national championships, I think Oklahoma's there instead, and Ohio State, and maybe it's just, again, like, it's just a media thing. You know, it's a much larger media market, massive alumni base, massive fan base. Ohio State's always going to be in the conversation, but I think that's probably the most fair comparison that I can look at as to how history would look at Oklahoma. I think you would look at them more like they are this perennial, like, top three, top four team every year. Mm-hmm. That they're always going to get it done, but and it doesn't happen. You lose those games and then you don't get that benefit of the doubt anymore. Yeah. So you needed one more to kind of break through, and it never came to fruition. But you kind of wonder, like, how much does it change college football forever? If OU beats Nick Saban in 2003
and kills Tim Tebow in 2008,
what does Nick Saban
do?
What is, like, does he, you know, I still think he bolts for the NFL no matter what, but is he still, like, the hot commodity to come back?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
To Alabama? Is he there? You lose a national championship game and then you get, like, disgraced at Miami. Like,
A
reporter from who covered Saban at LSU. It was just, like, so interesting, like, the sheer venom that the LSU fan base and, like, the LSU, like, media had for him after he won a national championship, but the way that he bolted. And then you talk about, like, the Miami media and how, like, it was a horrible experiment. So that's what I'm wondering is, like, does Alabama even go after Nick Saban if OU beats them in 2003? And then he goes and gets disgraced? Because that would be two programs that he kind of live. Like, one, he leaves on his own volition and own accord. I think you're probably right that Nick Saban still probably is Nick Saban and dominates college football. But it's a fun thought experiment of,
sure,
maybe his PR isn't as good as
right
there if he doesn't have that national championship. If OU forgets that Kewon Jones was running it down LSU's throat in the national championship game.
Yeah, that's fair to kind of say. But, like, I think, again, like, at the end of the day, you look at Nick Saban's rap sheet and it's pretty crystal clear. Hey, that dude wins wherever he goes. But also, Steven, kind of same.
Except Miami.
Same question. Yeah, you know, NFL wasn't here for him, obviously. But same question. Oklahoma, they win in 2003. Obviously, I saw you nodding in 2004. Yeah, we're not going to count that one. They got whooped 55-19. And 2008, though, definitely winnable. Should have beat Tebow there. And then, of course, they had some opportunities in the college football playoff, one of which you probably maybe should have won. But let's just stick with 2003 and 8 because those are games that were definitely winnable. Oklahoma suddenly has 9 national titles. How much does that change your perception of the program? You have 9 national titles to brag about inside the new millennia instead of 1.
It definitely puts you in the conversation with, like, the Alabamas, the LSUs, the Ohio States. They're more well-respected. Despite, you know, 7 national championships, you know, Oklahoma doesn't tend to be talked about as much. They're not the flashy team.
Yeah.
Just because they haven't won it 24 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're just kind of like a dormant volcano, basically. Like, no one's really talking about it until it happens. But I think if you win, like, 2004 or 2008, you change the trajectory, not just the reputation, but the trajectory of this program, especially. And you look at guys like, because we looked at, you know, 2009, 2010, you start tapering off in recruiting. Brent Venables probably doesn't leave if they win those championships. They don't bring Mike Stoops back. You're also recruiting better. So maybe you go out and you get some of these guys that Oklahoma really had a chance with, but at the very end kind of fell short. And I'm talking like guys that were really good, like Julio Jones, Cam Newton, these guys that, you know, win Heismans, win championships. You know, maybe Cam Newton comes to Oklahoma in 2010 because Landry Jones doesn't play.
Like, and so,
maybe that's, I mean, just, like, it's easy as it gets.
you've driven down or dove down, whatever the rabbit hole a little bit deeper into what kind of I was kind of lingering on to the next iteration is, I mean, you win those two national championships. I mean, Bob even said it in one of his books that, I mean, once he had won a national championship as DC with Spurrier, he was like, man, well, we've accomplished it all. Like, what's next, you know? And so he already wins his first one in 2000. He gets a couple in 2003 and 2008. He had another opportunity in 2004, obviously. Had some opportunities at 2015 and 17 as well. No, 15. Just 15 because he wasn't 17. They're at 17. But still had some other opportunities to win some national titles. And so does that prolong Bob's career by winning those national championships? Does it shorten his career because he decides to win those championships and go on top as winning winning three national titles as a head coach? And what's that mean a bit about Brent too? You just mentioned that, like, if he does continue to ride that wave of being a dominant head coach in college football, that is winning a title every, you know, seemingly 3 years or so, you know, your staff's going to be intact, and, you know, Brent maybe stays and gets continual raises and it becomes associate head coach and maybe becomes head coach anyways, or maybe Brent gets hired away anyways as a head coach somewhere else. And so what do you think that does to Bob's career in general? Does it shorten it? Does it make it a little bit longer? I mean, is that just dependent upon Bob?
I think it prolongs it a little bit. When you talk about Bob's career, you're talking about, you know, towards the end, like, recruiting was tapering off. Like, there just wasn't that energy there. Yeah. You get those national championships and all of a sudden, changes. You know, maybe you have a little more pep in your step. Like, maybe you're a little bit happier. Maybe you're this, that, or the other. But, you know, I think Brent doesn't leave because we've seen Brent. He was pretty content as being a defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't ready to jump off. But Heupel leaves. Heupel's going to leave regardless. So you're going to have to replace him somewhere. So maybe Lincoln Riley does end up in Norman, and now you have Bob Stoops as your head coach, Brent Venables as your defensive coordinator, and Lincoln Riley as your offensive coordinator. And you probably win another national championship in 2017. Yeah. So, but I think he'll retire soon after, and Lincoln's probably gone with another head coaching job, and Brent's the head coach to Oklahoma.
I mean, like, in Trevor, I mean, you're kind of nodding your head. I mean, Bob wins those titles, he gets three, right? Switzer got three, 74, 75, 85. I mean, does this prolong his career? Does it shorten his career? And ultimately, if it does prolong his career or even shorten his career, does him winning those three titles, does that ensure Lincoln Riley, of course, as a revisionist history, it's just a thought experiment, does that ensure Lincoln Riley never touches Oklahoma? But also, what does that mean for Brent Venables' future? Because as Stephen mentioned, like, and I thought it was a great point, he's a loyal defensive coordinator. He was willing to stay on staff with Dabo Swinney as a defensive coordinator, and he was waiting on a job like Oklahoma. And so what does it mean for his career too?
I mean, it's so obviously, like, this hypothetical, it's, like, so hard to put a pen in it. But I think, like, kind of hearing and seeing, like, how Bob, the kind of the randomness of his retirement, so to speak. to me, like, I think if he wins two other national championships, if he winds up with three national championships earlier on in his career, I think I think it shortens it, honestly. I think he's out kind of in the, like, earlier iterations of the playoff. Like, you know, maybe, like, he's out by 2013, 2014, because he, at this point, he talked about how, again, he wanted to be a dad. He wanted to have fun. And he lost his energy. I mean, think about it. He said himself, I lost my drive after I won a national championship. Like, I lost some of that edge. What?
Oh, nothing. I saw a tweet. I'm sorry.
I was like, what did I say? he lost that. If he loses the edge after one national championship, what does three do?
Yeah, and you know, that was one of the things that I was like really surprised he mentioned even in his book that he had written, that he's like, well, what's next? We've reached the pinnacle, and he's only a defensive coordinator. And so I kept on thinking, well, what's that mean for your future at Oklahoma after 2000? But of course, like, that's after the fact, right?
Well, I think Bob has this very heroic, honorable. He's probably like the last of the old guard of college football coaches, that he had this very honorable approach. And it was, you know, I am a shaper of young men. Like, I am here to, that's a really weird way to say it, but I am here to mold, these individuals.
Yeah.
He talked about a lot about, you know, his dad died at an early age and he saw what coaching did to his dad. And I think he kind of like had this burden on his shoulders that he felt like he had to go on at Oklahoma because he wanted. I do think there's a deep, profound love for the university and that program and what it did for his life and his family, that he felt beholden to like try to get it. And I think that's why he pushed as long as he did. But if he gets a couple of those national championships a little more or a little earlier in his career, I think he would have been able to walk away and say, this is it. And that's what I think he did when he did walk away.
Sure.
I've got Lincoln Riley. Everybody thinks he's the next genius in college football.
Yeah.
And this roster that I just assembled for him should go win a national championship. I'm out. And so like that's the timing made total sense. And if he's got national championships in the bag earlier, I think he's like, yeah, I'm good. I don't want to die like my dad did. Yeah. So that's just my take. It's hard. I don't know.
I think it's an interesting question to ask because, like, could you be a Nick Saban and prolong that championship streak and want to be that college football coach that makes that next dynasty that becomes the next Bear Bryant and wins all those titles? Or do you want to be a guy that, hey, like, Oklahoma is about winning championships, Bud won three, Barry won three, Bob won one. So, you know, that's how you got your seven. And so do you want to win your three and maybe get out just like Oklahoma? And that's kind of like Oklahoma standard for Oklahoma head coaches has been. But despite sustained success since the modern era, since World War II. So I think it's interesting to think about a thought experiment about Oklahoma, what Bob's career could have possibly looked like if it had been shorter, longer. Especially with their recruiting game anyways, which was always a thing with Bob. It's interesting to look at the past, especially if he has three rings, just like the other coaches, and because he did have several opportunities to. And they were close in a couple of those games. It just didn't work out. So I thought it was really interesting to dive into those thoughts. But anyways, that's kind of the end of the podcast. I really want to end with that kind of like social kind of experiment, because I think it's interesting to think about like the kind of games Oklahoma has played for, with the high stakes they have played for, but unfortunately under the Bob Stoops era and the Lincoln Riley era, don't get me wrong, squib kick McGee over there, but even in the Lincoln Riley era has had opportunities to go win and play for a national title, and they've just been squandered and not played and not finished, and it's kind of changed the trajectory and kind of the viewpoint of Oklahoma as a team, as you guys even mentioned with Ohio State. I think that's a great point. And so anyways, that's done with the podcast. Steven, do you have anything to plug?
Join the Discord always, because we're talking about recruiting. We're talking about transfer portal, which should kick back up in about 2 months or so. Thunder basketball, Oklahoma basketball, softball just got going, so there's a thread for that. It's all free. There's about 250 people talking about sports, so feel free to join in with us.
It is a fun community. I agree. They are a sarcastic bunch, but they are a loving bunch, and it will most of the time. So that's a very good point. And Trevor, do you have anything to plug?
Just just want to give a quick shout out to my buddy back Morgan, who's been listening to the podcast and sent some really kind words of encouragement last week about how much he loves the podcast. And so I love it when a listener, you know, reaches out and says that, you know, they're enjoying what we're saying. So I appreciate it because I feel like an idiot most of the time when I'm up here. So,
well, and yeah, we appreciate thanks, them for being a patron of the podcast, listen to the podcast. So we'll tell them and extend them, and, you know, an actual, or consider listening to this podcast, an actual thank you to them and also all of our listeners. So perfect transition. Again, thank you guys for listening to the podcast. We appreciate you guys so much. Like, we do this because it's fun. We do this for free. Any money we do get from Spotify, we put back into the podcast to make it a better quality podcast. You guys can follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at K_Morabian. You can follow Trevor at TrevorRogers_.1. And at Twitter, you can find Steven at OUUpdatedSB. Again, guys, we appreciate you guys for following the podcast, supporting us, especially throughout all these years. I echo this, the sentiment. Join the Discord as well. It's a great team. It's a great fun time. There's like a link for everything, even a food channel that people actually use. So sometimes they're good recipes, sometimes they're a little bit sloppy, but hey, you know, that's what we're here for. So anyways, we will check you guys later.